John Williams, head of ShadowStats.com, an alternative economic resource. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
It's great to have you back. And, you know, a lot of topicality since we last had you on the show. Obviously, we have the Fed wrapping up the rate hiking cycle a little more early than anticipated. I mean, it looks like they may have bumped up the benchmark overnight lending rate for the last time in December. Do you think that might change, that they still may have a couple more in their arsenal? And what are the implications for the markets?
Well, the way I'm reading the markets right now is that the markets are taking the Fed at its word from its last FOMC meeting. We'll see what their minutes show next week. But they indicated that they're still going to raise rates a couple of times next year, and the markets had hit to the stock market and had seen slowing economic growth, had thought that, you know, indeed, as you were suggesting, that we're not going to see any more rate hikes. And maybe that's the case. But that's not what they have formally indicated. And it is, let me put it this way. The Fed has raised rates. It's been taking action here basically to try and reverse some things that it did to save the banking system back a decade ago in 2008. Primary concern has always been saving the banking system, not the domestic economy. And everything they've done to prop the banks has largely been at the expense of otherwise stimulating domestic activity. Again, the Fed is owned by the banks, and that's their primary function, is to keep the system liquid and solvent. So what they've done here, they had to start moving the rates higher again if they ever had hope of getting the system back to normal. And as they started raising it, they frankly raised it much too quickly. It tightened up consumer liquidity. And the tightening of consumer liquidity, where the consumer really was not that liquid or healthy to start with, has put a damper on growth, and I'll contend has actually triggered a new recession. And what had happened was the markets recognized that the economy was slowing down because of these increased rates. That was probably the proximal trigger for the heavy stock selling that took place in December, although it started a little bit before then. Now, the Fed is trying, again, to protect the banks. That's their primary function in life. If they should reverse and say, gee, things are getting too tough here with the markets, maybe we need to not tighten any further. Maybe we need to look to cut rates. That's going to have a perverse circumstance here, because what you've seen recently with the stock market selling is that you've also seen a rally in gold and a sell-off in the dollar. That may be the markets anticipating that the Fed is going to have to pull back here. It could also be tied to other things, just tied to the weakening economy. But if the Fed takes deliberate action to reverse its tightening, to go back towards quantitative easing, that will accelerate the flight from the dollar and the rally in gold prices. And the Fed wants to keep the dollar strong, and it doesn't like gold. So that it's, in terms of what it would like to see at that end, they really don't want to reverse things, but I think from a practical standpoint, they're going to have to. And as you see the reversal in the Fed policy there, you're going to see an increasing flight from the dollar and flight into the safety of gold and silver.
How will the Fed be able to reverse rates or even pause when the rest of their colleagues around the world, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, of course, the People's Bank of China, are, of course, raising rates? It would seem to me the height of folly to lower rates while colleagues are raising rates, wouldn't it just collapse the U.S. dollar, put it in a more significant downtrend?
Well, let me put it this way. I think the Fed is leading the way for the rest of the world. And if they pull back, you're going to find everyone else, because they don't want to be too far out of whack. But the movements here are not going to be positive for the dollar, nor negative for the precious metals, because it's by moving away from the tightening, moving to loosen up some, that's going to be more inflationary, more dollar debilitating, and good for gold.
Talk about the implications of at least their rhetoric, whether or not they raise rates or not. I mean, it certainly seems as though investors and traders, money managers, are translating or decrypting this to mean that our policymakers are far less sanguine on the prospects of our economy. In other words, before we were priced to perfection, and it looks as though they're not convinced the economy is firing on all eight cylinders. They're far less concerned right now about inflation than they are about the prospects of job growth and slowing GDP. Are they justified in their concerns, and what does this mean for investors?
Frankly, I don't think they give much of a hoot about it. Their primary concern is the health of the banking system, and it's always been that.
Judging by share prices, Deutsche Bank, Bank of America, and virtually the entire financial sector, I mean, if we just use that little slice, it doesn't bode well for their banking system.
The U.S. is primarily looking at, the Fed is primarily concerned about the domestic banking system, but you've got to take in the global as well there, because it is a global system, and if you have problems with Deutsche Bank, you're going to have it. You're going to have terrible repercussions in the United States as well. That's why the other banks are going to pull back as the Fed does. They'll keep playing games. They'll do what they have to do to prop the banking system. My contention, very simply, is they should have let the banking system fail back in 2008, nationalized it or something. The average guy would have had his deposits covered by the government, irrespective of the what the FDIC limits were. They'd already gone to that extent. What it mean is that the you would have ended up with a new type of bank, but it would be one that could lend money and conduct normal business. People who owned the banks as they had been would be the ones who took the hit, but those were the entities that had gone bankrupt effectively, mismanaged and overseen by the Fed, which was owned by the same banks that are going under. I mean, talk about a conflict of interest. So that what you had there effectively was a canard aimed at saving the banking system, keeping the banks intact as much as possible, and the sacrifice was the economy. They never took all the action they took was at salvaging the banking system. If they had worked something different in terms of restructuring the banking system, let the business cycle take its course, you'd probably be in a lot healthier position today from an economic standpoint than you are. You still can't borrow money normally if you want to buy a house or such. It's not the lending end of it, the help for the consumer, the liquidity for the consumer still is not there, and that's what's killing the economy again, particularly as they start to raise the rates. Again, this is aimed at helping the bank profits, which is fine, but they need to have some balance there to help the economy, which has been lacking for most of the past decade.
You talk about strict lending, which emerged primarily following the credit crisis and the Great Recession of 2008-2009. You could make the case that it's a solid idea to constrict lending standards, but you seem to think that they're too constrictive, too stringent, and this might be a bottleneck in the economy today. And certainly, I think many of our listeners will agree with you. However, if we look at the official numbers, unemployment at recently near 50-year lows, we see GDP relatively strong. We haven't had two back-to-back, according to their numbers, negative GDP quarters, so we're not officially in a recession. Can you fill the void here, you know, the empty space between what we're getting from the mainline media and what Shadowstats sees? Can you explain the difference between what the everyday person boots on the ground is experiencing and what their models at the Fed say we should be experiencing.
Contend that you're seeing a booming economy. Hasn't been for some time. Going back in the over the last 30 years, there have been all sorts of changes made to the way numbers have been reported. Things such as the GDP, aside from adding in things such as... So we've had a lot of strong growth there, but that's largely bookkeeping gimmicks. There's no... But that provides a lot of the GDP growth. But the bulk of what you're seeing in the economic growth, such as GDP, is the way they define inflation. And they've lowered the inflation rate, headline inflation rate, through shifts in method. Is that where you measure inflation, where you measure economic growth, usually adjusted for inflation? The lower the inflation rate you use in deflating the nominal number, the stronger the growth you have. And right now they understate the GDP inflation by about 2 percentage points, and that's enough that instead of having right now the GDP is approximately 18.4% above its pre-recession high back in 2007. And that's thanks to the inflation numbers. If you back out that 2 percentage points understatement of inflation they have there, you're up. You haven't recovered yet. But putting that aside, you have a you have no other major economic series that comes close to showing an economic recovery, and this is again above the pre-recession high, up around 18.4%. If you look at the employment numbers, they're up maybe 6-8%. Retail sales up 6-8%. Retail sales, and that's adjusted for an understated CPI inflation. But then you look at elements such as industrial production, which is up maybe 2% from its pre-recession high, and that's because of strong oil production. But the dominant manufacturing sector has never recovered. It's still down 5% from its pre-recession peak, and it has not recovered now for 131 straight months. This is the production series, which includes manufacturing, is dominated by manufacturing, has a 100-year history. You've never seen anything like that, including the Great Depression, of non-economic recovery. Those are the Fed's numbers. You look at the housing sector. You haven't had all the elements of the housing sector, construction spending, however you look at it. None of those elements have recovered their pre-recession peaks. I'm talking now before 2007. So that you have meaningful areas of the economy that have not recovered formally. You have nothing else that's showing the magnitude of growth that the GDP has. It's a fantasy number.
Let's move on to the next topic du jour, trade war between the two global economic superpowers. We're hearing conflicting and very ambiguous reports from virtually every, you know, from the blogosphere right up to the mainline press. It's difficult to tell whether or not we're seeing a Smoot-Hawley-like reaction to these trade taxes, if you will. Obviously, the middle class is going, and the working classes are feeling the pinch. It is essentially just a tax. We import a tremendous amount of our goods and services. People at the top of the hierarchy are not going to feel the pinch there nearly as much as the rest of us. And as I think I've mentioned in the past here on the show, we had roughly $9,000 increase in new home prices just from the tariff on Canadian lumber. That's just one simple example of how this is impacting us already. Is this something that all investors should have on their radar screen?
Well, it's obviously of significance, but you have to understand the background to it here. I mean, the reason you do not have U.S. manufacturing is not recovered is that a lot of jobs have been lost offshore, and that's been due to a very liberal trade policies aimed at shifting domestic production and employment offshore. This has been federal policy. That's why Donald Trump got elected. The average American wasn't making ends meet. They wanted a change. They got it with Mr. Trump in there, and he's an interesting political situation that's evolving in Washington, but he, the way I read these tariffs and such are not so much as, you know, these are tariffs aimed at, you know, being here forever and ever, that I take them basically as negotiating tactics, elements to try and work better trade deals and get a little more economic production back in the United States. And if that works, it'll make it a healthier economy and people will have more income on average. And there's a balance there. And it's the, if you look at what's weakening our trade deficit now, I mean, what weakening our economy is the trade deficit, among other things. I mean, there are different ways you can look at it. But the, even given the headline, GDP was it held at 3.5% in the first two estimates for the third quarter and it came down a little bit in the last estimate. But, GDP is broken into a number of components. One of those components is what's called final sales. This is what's, you know, actually being moved out of inventories into the, into public consumption, where the total number, magnitude of, growth didn't change in the first revision. What happened was final sales declined because, what they'd estimated been sold in the way of motor vehicles, was revised lower, but then inventories went higher. The same thing happened in the third revision. So that where you saw, final sales of 5% in the second quarter, that slowed to about 2.5% in the initial estimate of the third quarter. Right now it's down to 1% in the third quarter. You're seeing the economy slow very, very rapidly there. Again, that's due to the Fed hiking the rates. People can't afford to buy automobiles, new automobiles, the way they did. Costs of financing are going up. So this is, again, getting back to the earlier issue, something that the Fed's got to look at here. But you also have the trade deficit widening. And that's despite the tariffs. We get some production back domestically. There may be some interim disruptions with prices and tariffs and such. But if the tariffs indeed are intended as negotiating tools to try and get overall a better trade picture, there should be some net benefit to the economy.
We've also seen, you might say, a revival or at least a tick up in the precious metals. As we already mentioned, the rate hiking cycle at least is slowing and might even reverse course. Then there is the inversion or at least flattening of the yield curve. So clearly there is the threat of a recession on the horizon. Doesn't mean we'll see one in 2019, but at least some money managers and top deep pockets are preparing for the possibility. Do you expect then, or are you even looking at U.S. equities, which were essentially the go-to bull market for a decade, to reverse course? Will we rebound, or have we seen the zenith in prices?
I'd stay away from equities. I think you've got an extraordinarily difficult time ahead. You're not getting accurate numbers out of the government. You get a lot of propaganda. This is not a strong economy. It's a weak economy. We already have a recession in place, and it's been created by the Fed by raising interest rates. They know that. They wanted to get rates higher. They didn't care that much about the economy. They're looking at the banking system again. But now that they're getting enough pressure that, gee, all of a sudden we have problems with the economy. When people there start talking about a slowing economy, you know you already have a recession in hand, and that's not going to be good for earnings. You don't want to, what you're seeing now in the equity selling, I believe, will tend to accelerate. I'd steer clear of stocks. Good time to batten down the hatches and make sure you've got some holdings of physical gold and silver.
Now, regarding gold and silver, will this be the safe haven that we've seen in the past? Some of our guests here are pointing more towards the equities to benefit. As U.S. equities start to slide, that investors will turn to, frankly, the XAU and the HUI. Is there anything you like in particular? Do you prefer bullion, the physical?
I see very dangerous times here. Circumstance with the Fed is far from resolved. We'll see where it goes. But if you get the them stuck in a circumstance here where they've triggered a heavy flight from the dollar and watch the dollar. I mean, you see the selling in stocks when you've had the heavy selling of stocks, as we're talking now. You've also generally had flight from the dollar and flight into gold. That's the flight from the dollar, weakness in the dollar that tends to create inflation. I don't like the circumstance at all. I think you may have got risks of extreme markets ahead, of systemic instabilities. And in that type of a circumstance, you want to hold the physical gold, not paper gold.
If we sort of step back for a moment, ignore the day-to-day fluctuations and gyrations in some of the primary themes, and just consider the number of wild cards and rogue variables. Plug that into your mental multivariate regression model. It would seem as though safe haven assets should be trading at a considerable premium. Just the opposite is occurring today. To what do you attribute this juxtaposition?
You've had a lot of manipulations of those markets in recent years, a lot done to discourage people holding the precious metals. The thing is that the precious metals retain their value over time against inflation. I estimate inflation as the way it used to be estimated, much higher than the government's numbers. And guess what? You go back to 1900 and plot the price of gold against the headline CPI and my CPI. The gold tracks my CPI. Gold measures as a hedge against inflation. I'm talking about the price of the physical metal. It's telling you that inflation's been higher. Where you want to preserve the purchasing power of your assets over time. I don't know of a better asset to put it in than the physical metal. Again, I'm not talking the paper, and I can tell you that if you think we came close to a collapse in 2008, which we did, you've got times like that ahead. They never resolved the crisis. That's what we're living through here. They're trying to get out of the gimmicks they put in place to hold the system together back in 2010, and they can't, as they're trying to get things back to normal. Now they're finding stocks are selling off. Well, it's not too surprising, perhaps, here, but the dollar's declining, gold's rallying. You can't fool those markets. There are enough people that have a sense of what's going on. This is not a time to put your money into equities and hope that they go through the roof. They may. I mean, I've certainly been wrong on that in the past, but I can tell you that the risks here of a catastrophic financial market failure are significant enough that you want to have a fair portion of your assets in physical gold as an insurance. You're not going to lose much money on it. I mean, that's, again, it'll always stay up with inflation. Hold it over time. If you're looking to trade day to day, God bless you. I'm not talking day to day trading here. I'm talking about holding the gold as a hedge against the loss of purchasing value of your assets over time.
Clearly, we did just put a bandage over 2008, 2009, the Great Recession, as some have given it the moniker. Fast forward 10 years later, suddenly we realize the short-term thinking might not have been the best idea. A result of having, you know, some of these shorter-term cycles, shorter-term thinking on our economic policymakers, we don't have the 10, 20, 30-year plan that you might see in other countries. They saw the stock market firm up, the housing market turned around into an echo bubble, you might say part two. But you see, they're looking at the Case-Shiller indexes, which give the false illusion.
In constant dollars, I'm looking at physical volume. That's the way you generally measure the economy. If you have high inflation, you can have, I mean, you want to take the effects of inflation out of there. That'll boost all your reporting, and it's what you're seeing is the growth in inflation, not the growth in the underlying physical activity. If you're making $100,000 a year and there's no inflation, yeah, okay, you're making $100,000 a year. If you're making $100,000 a year, you've got 10% inflation. Well, that $100,000 that you made last year and you haven't had an increase, it's only worth $90,000 in terms of what you can buy this year.
Don't forget the 33% tax you're paying.
Oh, right. Taxes, that's another issue, but it's, yeah, no question.
You've made it clear that the go-to asset will remain precious metals. We've certainly seen signs of life in 2018. Unfortunately, we've seen this happen year after year now for over the past decade, where we have a perk up in interest in demand, and that tends to taper off and tail off as the year passes. Do you see the yellow metal staging an advance in terms of, you know, U.S. dollars? What might this mean for the competing asset class?
Well, I have great respect for technical analysis, and if you're in normal circumstances, that can give you some good guidance. I can tell you that what I'm looking at here is not a normal circumstance. I'm looking at financial panic ahead, most likely. Certainly instability with the Fed, that they've lost control of the system. You're seeing that. You've got a fight going now between the White House and the Fed. The White House here is looking at trying to keep the public in a positive position in terms of their income and spending ability. It's not going that way. The inflation is beyond what they're advertising. That means that people are not making what they. You have ahead of you a confluence of factors, with the Fed trying to get the banking system back to where they want to have it. At the same time, they're killing the economy, and that in turn is going to bring down the financial markets. It's a conundrum that they don't have an easy way out of. You don't want to be in the stock market with this. Again, if you're looking, I mean, if you're, again, you're going into the play day to day, but this is the type of thing that over the longer haul, you're probably going to do better in the precious metals and something that has a real value over time than something that's tied to the speculative movements in very speculative markets.
You know, I hate to sound like a broken record. I wonder if any of our listeners even remember what a record is. For folks who maybe haven't tinkered around with, you know, portfolios and portfolio weighting and betas and alphas and things of that nature, it's the free lunch, you know, that Markowitz talked about. One of the few assets that gives one portfolio insurance, you know, 10%. If we're wrong, if John Williams is wrong, if I'm wrong, if Goldseek is wrong, the U.S. equities turn right around and blast off to Dow 50,000 and beyond. A 10% investment in gold and silver and related assets will not injure your expected return of that portfolio.
50,000, you'll find gold pretty close to that as well, because that's going to reflect inflation, not economic growth.
And I wonder if we won't be looking back in a few years at the lofty levels in the FANG stocks and related shares, recognizing, my goodness, that was a hyperinflationary blow-off. Or maybe that's to come.
It may be to come, but if you have a portion of your assets in gold, you're going to be so much better off than the rest of the world. You'll be in good shape.
You know, we've been talking for years about what's occurring in Venezuela, approaching astronomical numbers. It's mind-boggling what it costs to buy a loaf of bread. Rampant starvation, rioting, and there's a huge exodus out of Venezuela into neighboring countries. They don't know what to do with the folks. Of course, the go-to asset, sadly, the gold is long gone, so they've been turning to cryptocurrencies. That saved a few families. Inflation is so insidious. We're seeing it crop up now in Argentina and some of their neighbors as well. We've talked about the possibility of this for years on Goldseek, and we just haven't seen it in the developed Western world. Can you make that case?
There's no way that the U.S. is solvent long-term. Get the government's numbers. They show that, let me put it this way. If you think the current government can work things where they can bring the U.S. Treasury into long-term solvency, which means significantly raising taxes or cutting benefits to bring things like Social Security and Medicare into long-term solvency, there's probably nothing to worry about. My contention is there's not a chance they're going to do that. They're showing right now, they need $100 trillion in hand today to have the U.S. Treasury solvent over the long term. And that's based on the net present value of the money that's needed over time. That's what they need in hand today. There's no way they can cover that. Our economy is about $20 trillion. That's more than the global economy. So as you go down the road, they're going to, as Alan Greenspan very appropriately described it, when back in the days when Standard & Poor's downgraded the U.S. Treasuries, and it wasn't because they thought that they weren't downgrading the U.S. Treasuries because of long-term insolvency. It was fear that maybe somebody was going to create an event of default at the time they were arguing over debt back in, I guess it was 2009 or something like that. the problem is, and what Greenspan said at the time is, hey, you know, it's ridiculous. The United States will never default on its debt because its debt is all in dollars and we can print as many dollars as we want. And he's absolutely correct. The problem is that you print as many dollars as you want, you end up creating a hyperinflation. But so the dollar that you have today, if you say that's worth a dollar, it may be worth 2 cents, but you pay off your debt, at least in dollar terms. If you've got your assets in dollar terms, not something like gold, what you've got today that's worth maybe $100 is going to be worth 2 cents. That's where the gold provides you with a stability over time, the long-term purchasing power of your assets. You don't have to worry about the propriety of government spending and politics. If you think the government's going to balance itself out, don't worry about it. I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, you're certainly preaching to the choir here at Goldseed, purchasing power preservation aspects of the safe haven metals. However, there is still the case that the paper assets have performed remarkably well over the last 10 years. It's just been the go-to asset class. Do you envision, on a forward basis, the possibility or even probability, for instance, Cyprus and Poland, but about 5 or 6 years ago, I seem to recall some rehypothecation that occurred in both nations where investors had the same currency in their bank accounts, but it was worth half as much as it was the night before. Is that a possibility where there's a revaluation of the reserve currency of the U.S. dollar of competing currencies where investors and money holders are essentially fleeced overnight?
Well, that's generally what would happen. The value, you have to have some basis against which it's valued just by itself. I mean, if you're basing it against gold or other currencies, we haven't had a hyperinflation in the United States yet. Ultimately, the government is bankrupt. I'm telling you right now, just a matter of time. It's going to get worse and worse with inflation as you go along, unless the government can bring its system into balance. And to bring its system into balance, it has to make Social Security and Medicare solvent. And I just don't see any way the politicians in the United States are going to do that. If they do that, then I'll change my tune on the dollar. True fiscal responsibility. But we don't have it.
Clearly, I mean, if you look at the stats, some of which actually emerge from the Fed itself, and some of the survey results indicate that the overwhelming bulk of working and middle-class Americans, and North Americans for that matter, are living paycheck to paycheck. If we believe the government's numbers, that the economy is as robust as the numbers seem to indicate on the surface without adjusting them for shadow stats' true inflation figure, if we believe those numbers, then it would seem to me as though either employers have simply stopped paying a living wage or inflation is already rearing its less than savory head.
Yeah, well, obviously it's the inflation. And the thing is they don't report it, but they underreport it. This has been a problem for some time. And you got to give Alan Greenspan good credit here back in the days of Bill Clinton. The Congress moved to change the CPI. The reason for doing it was basically to reduce the budget deficit by paying out less in cost of living adjustments to Social Security recipients. Then they redefined the CPI to lower it. What they did was they said, well, you know, what you can do is have substitution in your inflation measure. But that's not what inflation measures were designed to do. The whole concept behind an inflation measure, cost of living, or a CPI over the, actually it's been centuries that you've had consumer price indices, was to measure the cost of maintaining a constant standard of living. Say, I want to be able to live this year like I did last year, minimally. How much is my cost of living like this gone up? What they would do is they'd price out a basket of goods, and they'd take up, say, very crudely, about pound of steak, a gallon of gas, a loaf of bread, they'd price it out 1 year, they'd price it out the next year, however much that had gone up by, that was how much the rate of inflation was. That's how much your income would have to go up if you wanted to maintain a constant standard of living. What Greenspan said very simply is that's wrong. If steak goes up in price, people are going to eat hamburger, they're going to eat more chicken, so that their expenses aren't going to be as high. But that's not maintaining a constant standard of living. I'd rather have the steak than a hamburger. That would keeping the steak in my consumption basket is what I would consider maintaining a constant standard of living. So what the government did was they changed the CPI so that it no longer reflected a constant standard of living. They allowed substitution, among other things. So the government numbers don't keep up with what most people live to maintain their lifestyle as they used to. As a result, people are suffering. They know it. But that was designed by the government and the way it redefined its numbers.
No, it's well said, and we jokingly say here on the show that if the Fed chairman, if they were forced to pump the gas at the pump instead of their chauffeur, we wouldn't have this problem. In other words, they're not following the everyday prices the way the rest of us are forced to. All right, it's sort of like going to the doctor, isn't it? So we're getting a dose of reality here from shadowstats.com. But, you know, the truth will set us free over time, I guess. Perhaps you'd like an opportunity to give your thoughts on 2019 and maybe an overview of what you see ahead, if you'd like.
Well, very simply, I think because of the Fed's tightening, which they're not reversing, they're not reversing it at this point. They may stop raising rates. But they're, at least officially at this point, committed to another couple of rate increases in 2019. You're going to see an intensifying economic downturn. It's already slowing down. People are beginning to see it. Housing market's slowing down. Motor vehicle sales are slowing down. That's a consumer. Consumers feeling the liquidity squeeze. And that's so that, I think, will force the Fed into backing off. As they back off from the tightening, maybe go back to actually quantitative easing. The reason they went to quantitative easing was that they had a recession, which put the added the tremendous liquidity stresses on the banks. They had to go in and save the banks. And if you start to see the economy weaken here, and all of a sudden some loans are not good and the banks are under liquidity stress again, they're going to go back to quantitative easing. But if they do that, all the strength you've seen in the dollar in the last couple of years disappears, because that was all because of the backing away from the quantitative easing, the higher interest rates. And you're beginning to see the dollar weaken. Dollar weakens, people flee to gold for the same reason. You want to preserve the purchasing power of your assets because of relative inflation. We have an environment ahead of us which is going to be a weaker than expected economy and higher than expected inflation, and a Federal Reserve that is going to be in increasing conflict with political. Just have, as you say, you don't need everything, all your assets in gold, of course not, but some portion. Physical gold, it's an insurance policy. I can tell you that you need the insurance policy over the long term. I can't tell you precisely when the timing here is going to blow it apart. But the chances of our avoiding a hyperinflation down the road are nil, shy of a major overthrow of our political system.
That's a powerful statement. And the only thing I'd add here, you know, I'd propose that the yellow metal is just a touch more than an insurance policy. It's an enhanced insurance policy, one that doesn't require premiums. Best sleep at night policy for every single household. And sadly, as we mentioned, so many are living paycheck to paycheck. Reports also indicate a few have even $400 to $500 on hand for emergencies. It's just not a rosy picture, but you believe that this might escalate between the Fed and...
So absolutely, because the Fed is doing now is counterproductive for the economy. That's going to run against the administration, and it's doing that for the banks. Again, the Fed's primary concern here is the banking system. So that's a long-term problem. It's been a problem for the last decade. It's one reason we never really recovered.
Would you like to share any contact information and tell people what they'll find at ShadowStats?
ShadowStats.com. It's a newsletter I put out electronically, available by subscription. You can find it at www.shadowstats.com. $175 a year, $89 for 6 months. always happy to get new subscribers, but you'll find if you go to our site, there's a lot of information there that gives you background in the areas that we've been talking about.
We appreciate your thoughts, and we'd like for you to tell people more about the ShadowStats website and all the great services you're providing.
So I have a website, ShadowStats.com. I provide a weekly newsletter. It's available to subscribers. They can download it from the site. But there's also a lot of information on the site that gives you background on a great deal of what we've talked about here today. That's free to anyone who wants to look at the site. You'll see articles over on the right-hand side. Left-hand side, you see the headlines from recent newsletters back several months. Those are all open to the public. We're always happy to have new subscribers. It's $175 a year, $89 for 6 months. If you've got any questions, you can find a way of contacting me on the website. Happy to communicate with you.
John Williams, thanks so much for making time for us today. Talk soon.
Thank you, Chris.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at APMEX. One Gold Digital holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. One Gold Digital. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. One Gold offers the best tier pricing on APMEX products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, One Gold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.